Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Sports Joe presents the GAA Hour.
Okay, you're all very welcome to the show. Obviously, All-Ireland Club Final review show. And what a brilliant pair of games we had on Sunday. Between the hurling at the start, you probably thought it couldn't get better, it couldn't get tighter than that with the football coming on. But it did, it was just as tight. Both games going down to the very last puck and the very last kick in the football. Unfortunately for the two free takers, neither of them could score. They were obviously very difficult frees to take on. But Lee, that just underlines the day of drama that we had on All-Ireland Club Final Day in Croke Park yesterday.
Yeah, it does now. You know what? And it was testament to the four teams that were playing in the middle of a storm in those terrible weather conditions. You know, people were talking about postponing the game and stuff beforehand. But for those teams to go out and play at the level they did, like, you know, watching from TV, you wouldn't even really have known that there was a storm going on because they were just so fluid in their games, like, and it was a brilliant spectacle. I was sort of fearing the worst in terms of entertainment and how the wind was going to affect the game, and it obviously still played its part, but it didn't do anything to null the drama.
Yeah, it nearly added to the drama, Lee, in fairness. Like, I suppose All-Ireland Club Final, it's just one of those days. It's very rare, I suppose, that you get two games in the one day that you're equally as interested in. Do you know when it was All-Ireland's, say, senior hurling finals, it's a minor game and a senior game, and on club final day you have the senior hurling, the senior football. It's just special that you have one game following another, non-stop drama. And I suppose if your own club is competing in it, you'd nearly be shot with nerves, like. But when you're kind of a neutral, in some ways, you can just enjoy it that bit more. And I have to say, it is my favourite day in the calendar because of that reason. You have the two games to kind of, you can soak it all in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like Christmas Day for club GAA, isn't it? You know, to have these two massive occasions sort of squeezed into to the one stadium. And then sometimes when you have a game and the first game is really exciting, the second game, you know, it doesn't tend to live up to the expectations, but in All-Ireland Final Day, it normally does. And then also, when it's two county games, like when you've got back-to-back games, my mind always goes back to, do you remember a couple of years ago when Armagh played Galway in that absolute thriller? I think you were at it.
Yeah.
And it went to penalties. And then after that game was Kerry and Mayo, which is absolute blockbuster in any regard, but everyone was just zapped. You know, and you couldn't even enjoy it, and it couldn't live up to it. It was nearly too much. But because club football, club hurling, you know, it's the 60 minutes, so you save 20 minutes, I suppose, between the two games. They're both finals, two different sports as well, obviously. It just all adds to the occasion. It's like the perfect like cocktail of just entertainment if you're a GAA fan.
Yeah, they both lived up to it as well. Like, and in fairness to the hurling and the football, they were both just brilliant games. We're going to start off with the football, Lee, and obviously it's great times for Ulster Club GAA. They've won the three All-Irelands with Arva winning the junior, with Cullyhanna of Armagh winning the intermediate, and with Glenn winning the senior. Glenn were obviously and probably the hotly fancy team out of the three coming into the finals. When they had beaten Kilmacud Crokes and when they'd been there last year, it kind of seemed as if, you know, it almost seemed as if it was fate for Glenn coming up to this game. But I suppose and Bridges were probably written off from that perspective coming into the game.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. And like Glenn, they went into the final last year as underdogs, and then you sort of have that tag again when you get to repeat the feat of reaching the All-Ireland final again. It's a little weird sort of pattern that's emerged, isn't it? Kilcoo lost an All-Ireland final, then they won it the next year against Kilmacud Crokes. So Kilmacud Crokes lost that final, and then they won it the next year against Glen. Glen lost that final, so they've won it the following year, this year, against St. Bridget's. So that's a good omen for St. Bridget's at least. But not only that, they're just a fantastic team. They really took the game to Glen. I mean, there's a combination. Okay, Glen definitely didn't play to the best of their potential. We know that some of them players, especially in terms of their shooting, can do a lot better. But St. Bridget's were just so clinical. I mean, their forwards, we talked a lot about their forwards going into the match, and they're just devastating. So they are, and they really, you know, match the occasion. And I have no doubt, given their age profile as well and the experience that this will give them, I think St. Bridget's will be around for a long time to come.
Well, isn't it unbelievable, Lee, that they hadn't been in the last two Roscommon senior football finals? Like, and you're looking at them yesterday, and you're looking at them, you know, in the last few games that they've played. Like, we've seen them against Cara Finn, where they were unbelievable. We've seen them against Castlehaven, they were very good. And I suppose they haven't been in the last two finals. And, and Jerome Stack was asked about that in an interview after the game. He was obviously very disappointed. He was asked, like, do you think you'll be able to come back next year? Like, they're obviously a young team. And he just said, you know, like, it is very hard to get out of Roscommon, even harder again to win Connacht. Like, so, like, there's no guarantees, but he obviously backed his young team that they will be able to do it again next year. But, like, they took the whole championship by storm, and they took that All-Ireland final by storm, Lee, because as you said, Glenn were such overwhelming favourites. Like, anywhere you listen to, people were talking that Glenn will cover the handicap, that, you know, wherever Bridget's have their strong points, you're thinking of Eddie Nolan, Ben O'Carroll. Like, people were saying that wherever they have the strong points, that Glenn are just better. Like, but from the 13th minute to the 57th minute yesterday, Glenn or Bridget's led that game, and they were much the better team. And like, they were 4 points up with 4 minutes to go, and you're thinking that they're home and hosed. Like, people were saying, I was up in Croke Park, and people were saying the two cups are heading to the west of Ireland. Like, It's a credit to them, I suppose, the way that they did show up and completely attacked the game, and they just played Glenn off the park, really, for I suppose the middle period of that game anyway.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And we, like I said, we all know going forward, like, what they offer in terms of attack with Ben O'Carroll and Derwin and stuff. But defensively, they were brilliant. You know, in possession, they were fantastic. Clinically, they were just so much better than Glenn. I think Glenn had hit something like 7 wides before the 37th minute or something, and St. Bridget's only finished the game with 1 wide at the very end. So that just tells you how...
The very last kick, like, that's unbelievable, yeah. Really.
Yeah, and it wasn't even far off either. Like, I mean, that's just how accurate they are, and that's why I think they'll be so devastating again next season. But I know, I take the point that getting through Roscommon is challenging enough, because funny, I interviewed Conor Glass last week, and I sort of said, you know, at the start of the year, this is where Unes will have wanted to be. Unes will have said, like, oh, one game at a time, but really Unes would want to have been back in the club All-Ireland again. And he was like, I'm not joking when I say that we couldn't think like that, because getting out of Derry is so difficult. You know, it was only 3 years ago before they had even won a Derry senior championship in their history. And they couldn't take that lightly. So, like, that's why the All-Ireland Final is such a massive occasion, isn't it? Because to get through your county and then to get through your province and to make it this far and to rack up all them wins against so many incredible teams is just fantastic. And by the end, it looked like St. Bridget's were riding that momentum better, while Glen nearly looked flat. They looked like, you know, it had been a long season. There, this back-to-back All-Ireland Finals, that's almost two seasons without stopping. And it, you know, nearly had ran out of steam just at the very last minute, but they managed to pull it off in the end.
Well, that's it. Malik O'Rourke said afterwards that we nearly saved our worst performance until last. We just couldn't get going at all. Possibly we were a wee bit nervous. You can mask it all you want, but after losing one All-Ireland, you don't want to lose a second one. And they kind of played like that, Lee, like a team that were, I suppose, more afraid of losing, I suppose, than, you know, attacking the game like Bridget's were. And it was funny, I'm sure you've seen it during the week, Shane Kern was on off the ball, and it was probably one of the funniest match previews I've ever seen. Like, it was a minute and a half clip, and he said that the Glen bus driver will be nervous. He might take the... Kern obviously had it that Glen were staying in Johnstown House Hotel in Kildare, and he said the bus driver, he might take the South Ring Road instead of the North Ring Road. They won't be sleeping in their own beds. They mightn't want the breakfast Sunday morning, even though the breakfast is lovely. While the Bridget's lads will have their mothers making the breakfast for them. Like, so this was obviously Shane Kern was you know, he was on a bit of a wind up, and he wasn't being too serious. Like, but I seen a lot of people did take him very serious. He was getting a lot of criticism from some people, but in fairness, he was nearly proved right for parts of the game that they were nervous.
Yeah, like it did sort of look that way, and I know what you mean when it looked like they were playing sort of safe. But there's nothing as draining on a team when you're hitting wide after wide, because you know then when you've got the ball in a shooting position, you've maybe just missed the last three as a team, and if you hit this shot way, then that adds up to four, and then suddenly you guys are in like a real disaster, and you don't want to be the person that made them do that. And it has like a doubling effect, because then you've got players like, you know, real leaders in the team, like a Kieran McFall, who are going to burst through and like, no, I'll take responsibility here, but then maybe the shot selection wasn't the best one. So it does just add to the weight, and it just zaps the soul out of you. So it does, like, and it really felt that way with Glen. But at the same time, you never really doubted their character. Like, even when they went 4 points down at the very end, I still thought they were going to get it back till close. Not necessarily that they'd win it, but I didn't think St. Bridges were ever going to win that game by more than a point or two at the absolute most. And there were sort of hints of that at the end of the first half when they managed to get the goal, because they scored 1-1 in like the last minute, maybe 2 minutes of the first half to make it all square. And like, to be honest, they didn't deserve to go in halftime at all square, but that's sort of what champions do.
Yeah, like, you have to give them credit that, and it is a sign of a good team, as we always say, that if they're not playing well, that they're still able to grind it out. And in fairness to Glen, they did do that, and like, you have to credit the character, because they would have been, like, they were down to 14 men when Cathal Mulholland got his black card. This would have felt like a nightmare in Croke Park for them. Like, Eunan Mulholland had gone off injured.
Connor Carville
had gone off injured, their captain. Yeah. Kieran McFall, as you mentioned, like, that wide hit from the 21, like, that was just, and he lay down on the ground after kicking it, and you're just thinking, like, this is not these boys' day. Like, McFall hit four wides in the game, and you know, it was a great sign of them that they did eventually grind it out, because there were so many moments, Lee, where you just felt that, like, this isn't Glen's day. And the camera would pan to Malik O'Rourke, and he would turn around, and he would just look nearly shocked at what was going on in front of him. Like, I'm thinking of that McFall wide. Like, Mulholland was so silly, really, for that black card that he gave away. Just jumped on Robbie Dolan, who was only running out of his own 21. Like, you know, he wasn't any danger whatsoever. Like, I remember Lee in the first half, like, Tiernan Flanagan, do you remember he gave the ball away to Rory Fallon to set up that goal chance that Ben O'Carroll, like, you would have put your house on Ben O'Carroll to score that, especially the way he'd started the game. Mm-hmm. Like, that wasn't the only time Glenn did this type of thing. Ryan Dugan kicked it over Michael Warnock's head at one stage. Mm-hmm. Warnock was given out to him.
I think the wind took that one. That's what I was going to ask you about, the wind.
Maybe so. It was a crossfield wind now as well. But, like, I don't think Kieran McFaul could blame the wind. Do you remember maybe two or three minutes in when he just fisted the ball straight out of play? Conor Carville did something similar in the second half. He just kicked the ball straight down to Bridget's man in about 30 yards of space all around him. Like, so there was things going on that you just, I suppose, we hadn't anticipated from Glenn.
Yeah, no, that's it. Like, there was a lot of head shaking, wasn't there? And a lot of looking up to the skies to be like, where are you doing this to me? And when you're watching it, you sort of go into that mode yourself where you're like, it isn't their day. It's not going to happen. And then that's why it makes the last 10 minutes all the more impressive, because it's one thing to show up on All-Ireland final day like St. Bridget's did, but it's another thing to have everything going against you and to miss the shots that you've missed, but to still keep plugging away and backing yourself that you'll find a way. And then to have the coolness to make some of the, because their decision-making, sorry, was awful in a lot of the game, but in those last 10 minutes, they nearly could do no wrong. Like, we'll get into the Conor Glass, because it was the Conor Glass show in the end. Danny Tallon turns the ball over. They win a free kick and near the sideline. Conleith McGuckin has the, you know, the guile to take that free quickly because he sees Conor Glass with a bit of space.
And he was after hitting three very bad wides as well, Lee.
Yeah, absolutely. But he never stopped. Like, you know, I thought he was. It was almost inspirational watching him. You know, like, he was one player that just never looked undeterred. He just looks like he has like a natural positivity about him. And he was still, you know, sharp enough to hit that free to Conor Glass. And then this moment, like, I mean, the place must have just erupted, because it looked, for everyone's sake, that he was going to take the point, you know, and bring it back till 2 point gap. But he just puts his boot through it. The keeper didn't even move for it, and it ruffled the back of the net. And then suddenly, you know, you've got a game on your hands here. And Conor Glass was just epic for that entire match. He's the one player for 60 minutes plus. Nearly didn't put a foot wrong. He hit a crucial point in the first half, a brilliant block in the first half as well. The 45, I think, was their first point in the second half. And then this goal was just, that was the cherry on cake. I mean, what was it like in the stadium when that went in?
I was stunned, and I think everyone was stunned, because you nearly felt as if St. Bridget's name was written on the cup at that stage. Glass said afterwards, I'm sure you remember last year, Lee, when he got that chance against Kilmacud late on and it broke him and he kind of side-footed it. And it was actually a brilliant save by Conor Ferris from Kilmacud. But Glass said after the match yesterday, I said to myself, if I ever get that opportunity again, I'm just going to put my foot through it. If it comes off, it comes off. If it doesn't, at least I went for it. Thankfully, it happened today and I was able to get that opportunity again. And I suppose, you know, it's a credit for him that he did get that opportunity. Like, not many lads would have probably made that run for Conleth McGuckian. Not many lads would have went for the goal, as you said. I do think the Cormac Sheehy kind of, the Bridget's goalie, he maybe made it a little bit easier for Glass in that he was caught in no man's land and he was on his way back to the goals as Glass had the ball in his hands. That's not to take away from the finish from Glass, obviously. But yeah, like he was the man. Like, you mentioned some of the brilliant things he did. Like, there was two interceptions in the first half that were just, he has this athleticism about him, Lee, that he can kind of do things at pure ease. Like, even after they had gone one up, Emmett Bradley had scored the free to put them one up, and the next kick out, this was again like a little bit silly from the Bridget's goalkeeper Sheehy, that he hit straight down on Conor Glass, like, who was obviously on fire at the time. And that was the second time that the kick out went down on top of Glass, and you're thinking, get that ball as far away from him as possible the way he's playing. But he jumped up into the sky, and it was like nearly an AFL mark. He got up so high and fisted it down, and it broke. I think it came straight to Conleth McGuckian. and then he put them two up, you know. So he was the man that stepped up, and I suppose he was the man that was, you know, while lads like maybe McFaul, and in fairness to McFaul, he kept going as well. Like he despite having the wides, he stayed in the game and was still prominent. The same for McGuckian later on. But Glass was the only one, maybe Ethan Doherty as well. I thought he tried to take the game into Bridget's, even though he did run into cul-de-sac sometime. But Glass was probably the lad that was there the whole way through at the top of his game.
No, he was for sure. And like, just on Conor Glass, I mean, I remember watching Conor Glass in the Macquarie Cup final. What year would that have been? Maybe 2013. And he was only fifth year in the team. So he's about 15 and he's playing on, you know, what is essentially the sixth foreign team. And he's playing at halfback because he's at that stage, he hadn't fully grew. Like, so he was still small, but he was this flying machine and he was just fantastic. And I think St. Pat's Mahara won the Hogan that year. And then he just flew from there. He won an Ulster title, I think, with the Derry. It was either Derry Minors or the Derry Under 20s. And he'd signed a contract to go over to the AFL, the Hawthorns, when he turned 18. So everyone knew he was leaving at 18, you know, and obviously Glenn were devastated that they were going to be losing this talent. And he went over there, he went 4 or 5 years and he did brilliantly, and he gathered such brilliant experience. And he came back in 2020, right at the height of COVID, and Derry were playing Armagh in the Ulster Championship with no crowd, that winter championship that Dublin won. And like, he'll be the first to admit it, you know, like, everyone was really excited. Like, oh, this is Conor Glass, he's finally home. And he just wasn't effective in the game at all. You know, he sort of looked lost at sea, and for good reason, because, you know, he was literally off the plane in a Derry County team with no real training with him, technically playing a different sport for the last 4 years, obviously. And then people thought, this is just another potentially, you know, a hype job, really, a young kid who was given too much credit too early on. But what followed the end from 2020 is just absolutely insane. You know, he came home to win big trophies for a club that had never won a Derry senior championship, and for a county that hadn't even lifted Ulster since 1998. And since then, he's lifted 2 Ulsters with Derry, 3 Derry championships with Glenn, 2 Ulsters with Glenn, and now an All-Ireland club, all within, what, like a 4-year period. And to say that he was at the heart of all of that, is probably an understatement. He's just a genuine colossal of a player. The ultimate, you know, I am him sort of performance. I thought he was magnificent.
Yeah, and to be man of the match in the club final on top of that, you know, it cemented the couple of years that he's had. He was absolutely brilliant on the day. And yeah, as you said, it's no coincidence that since he's come back, the fortunes of club and county have both turned for the better. Just looking back in the game, Lee, like, have you ever seen the Glen defence under such pressure? Like, I know we've seen them against Kilmacud and against Kilcoo at different stages, but like, I Michael Warnock is one of my favourite players in the team, because he seems to have everything. Like, he has pace, he's great at reading the game. He stepped in at centre back last year when there was no Kieran McFaul. And like yesterday, like, it's Ben O'Carroll had him like under all sorts of pressure. And Ben O'Carroll is obviously an unbelievable player, and like, so the speed he has and the skill he has. There was one passage of play I put up on my Twitter there today, when Eddie Nolan the ball was going out of play and Eddie Nolan just drew a boot at it down the line towards O'Carroll, and like, the ball was flying at him and he just collects it, no bother whatsoever, picks it up first touch, absolutely perfect, gets surrounded by 2 lads, somehow breaks it out, runs on. You know, he did absolutely brilliantly for that goal for Brian Derwin when he kind of cut back behind Warnock. Warnock was out in front of him, and Robbie Dolan found him with a brilliant pass. But I suppose, yeah, the point I'm making is the real electricity and the swagger that Bridget's brought to the game. It was just a joy to watch, because, yeah, we mentioned that they only had one wide in the whole game. Like, these boys were so clued in. And, you know, it probably was just that small thing at the end that caught them. But, yeah, have you seen Glenn, like, under such pressure, and because the, all the talk was that Bridges wouldn't get the space that they had been getting, you know, against Carfin, mm-hmm. Castlehaven.
No, yeah, like, and like, if you're really confident about any area of the Glen team, you know, you, first of all, midfield, obviously, with Amit Bradley and Conor Glass, but then the defence is just, they're just such a sure thing. And I think I was best typified when they played Scotstown, you know, and everyone was talking about, geez, like Scotstown, I mean, they've got a county player in every sort of section of the pitch in every line. And it's like Conor McCarthy, Jack McCarran, you know, the Hughes, like, it's just, you know, how you're going to be able to keep them as quiet as you can do. And I thought they did a brilliant job that day. So you just think this is going to be business as usual. But I think it's really just, it is just testament to players like Brian Derwin and Ben O'Carroll. Like Ben O'Carroll, before the final, I know we're going to talk about this later, he would have been in contention for player of the championship all through, because he has just been devastating. He's so, so clever, so fast, so skillful. He makes nothing balls into something, like you, that example you used, you know, like, I mean, that was sort of a nothing thing, and he managed to win it and turn it into something positive for St. Bridget's. So it is just credit to the St. Bridget's forwards, and we talked about that a lot going in. I thought Glenn got a hold of them a little bit better when Ryan Dugan went on to Ben. That definitely,
yeah,
seemed a better matchup, that sort of changed the dynamic just a little bit, because it stopped the onslaught from St. Bridget's. It allowed Glenn to settle a little bit and finally get some points. And I actually think it was Michael Warnock who got the point that brought it from 4-3.
It was.
And then that maybe give Conor Glass the onus to go for goal, you know, knowing that it would actually equalise. And it's just sometimes changes like that. You don't think, everyone thinks it has to be like a substitute, you know, you got to bring a player on and he has to change the whole game. But it can be as cute as just swapping a marker, you know, or a slight positional change, and dropping a sweeper or whatever, and then suddenly everything clicks.
And that was it, because like all the momentum was with St. Bridget's, and when they were taking on those shots in the first half, like some of the scores they kicked into the breeze that we've already mentioned, like Rory Fallon kicked one in the first half, was absolutely unbelievable. Mm-hmm. He kicked another brilliant one late on as well, the one that put them 4 up, where he just sliced through the Glen defence. And he's definitely a man that will be, I'd say, will be seen. I know he was on the Roscommon panel, but we'll be seeing more of him, I'd imagine. Eddie Nolan kicked 2 brilliant ones as well. Kieran Sugrue as well. Brian Derwin. And then the 2 wing forwards are jai to watch, Connor Hand and Robbie Dolan too. But I suppose it was in those last 5 minutes, Lee, where it just seemed, I think Glen, they won 2 or 3 kickouts in a row. And they kind of came on to them like a tidal wave, nearly. There was no stopping Glen at that stage. And when they got level, you nearly felt as if Bridget's race was run. Like, and I'd say they were shocked, because it all happened so quick, from being 4-4 up to Warnock's point to Glass's goal. And especially the manner of Glass's goal. Like, some people were giving out about Robbie Dolan, that he took the free a bit quick. And maybe he did. I know he was giving his teammate, kind of, you know, lifting his leg up. His teammate had cramp, yeah, and then he kicked it up along the line. I think the referee must have been onto him, because you wouldn't have seen him kicking that ball so quick otherwise. But yeah, it just turned so quick, and you probably didn't think they had time to respond. They nearly did respond, but I suppose it came down to that last free, which was a good effort as well by Shane Conan, Lee.
Yeah, no, it was excellent. And do you know what? Just again, to talk a little bit that comeback, and we talked there about the mentality of these Glen players, that even when they are maybe having a difficult game, like you mentioned, Michael Warnock maybe struggling on Ben O'Carroll, but then he goes and he kicks that point. You know, like these players don't let negative sort of seep into their performance. They never hide after mistakes like that. Like Conlick McGuckin maybe missed 3 shots before he kicked that brilliant one to give them the lead in the first place. And then I thought Conleith again, he made the decision, and it was, you know, it was a calculated decision to make the foul that he did that resulted in the free kick right at the very end. You know, it was a black yard. It couldn't have been more blatant that he was just cynically bringing him down, you know, to stop St. Bridges getting an equaliser, or working the ball into a position where they could get a better shot. And although you could argue that, like, you know, giving a free kick and allowing a taker of his calibre sort of time and space, you know, and the freedom to take that shot without any defenders and stuff was a silly mistake. But St Bridges, we talked about it all day about how potent they were up front. You know, they probably were going to work a chance, and going by the statistics, they were going to score it. So I think it was, the shot was maybe 45 metres out. Was it against the wind? Mm-hmm. Colin McGuckin, you know, to have the guile and the awareness at that stage of the game to make the foul there. Because literally, any, you know, even a few steps closer to goal and suddenly it's a silly free kick to give away. But it did go wide and it paid off in the end. But it was a calculated risk.
Especially when Canaan had just scored a free minutes earlier. Do you know, his confidence would have been high. And he definitely struck that last free. He struck that very well too. It just tailed off slightly in the wind at the finish. And look, Glenn, like, nobody could argue that that these lads don't deserve an All Ireland title. You know, they've been the standout club team this year. They're now the first side from Derry to win the All-Ireland club title since Ballinderry in 2002, and they wrapped off a nice record for Ulster, which I'm surprised you didn't take the opportunity to gloat about earlier in the show there, Lee, that they're the third team to win the All-Ireland.
It's just a given at this stage, isn't it, that Ulster rules club football. Another little interesting record there, because they're the fourth team in Derry to lift the club All-Ireland. That means they're now on par with Dublin and Kerry as a county, because Dublin and Kerry have also got four different teams that have lifted that trophy as well. So, and you know, Derry's obviously a smaller county, so big credit to them, obviously. And you think of like how close like Sláinte had came in recent years as well. You know, it's very impressive what they're doing in club football, and you're really only seeing the fruits of it now at county level, because they've been a bit of a sleeping giant in recent times. What did you think of the celebrations afterwards? Like, Conor Carvel loves he loves a speech. Like, you know, I think he's brilliant. I really enjoy them.
Yeah, it's funny, the speeches, like the Ulster speeches are all kind of similar in that it's like they're so passionate when an Ulster team wins. Like, it was similar to the Cullyhanna captain Smith last week, and there's maybe kind of less excitement in it. It's more kind of just like, do you know, there's kind of pauses for dramatic effect and so on. There's a different kind of speech between the Ulster winners, I think, and the winners from, say, Munster, Connacht or Leinster.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. There has to be a little bit of
we were written off.
Yeah. You know, underdogs, look at us now, you know. And what did he say? He said, if you're from Glen, you know, you can stick your chest out and say, I'm a Wadi and we're Club All-Irelands and King of Ireland now. Because last year, obviously, when they'd lifted Ulster, he made the claim, you know, Kings of Ulster. So that's like a little theme that he's got going on. And to be fair to him, he's got plenty of practice in recent years. You know, that man is fairly used to going up steps to lift trophies. So I do, I enjoy it. And did you see Conor Glass, or you already mentioned a little bit of Conor Glass's interview after the match about how he was never going to sort of let that situation happen again. But, you know, like the reporter was trying to sort of say, you know, how amazing he was and how brilliant he was to get that goal and take the game. But he sort of replied and said, you know, that wouldn't have happened if, you know, Danny Tallon hadn't got that turnover down the wing, you know, to change it. That's your teammates helping you out. And I just sort of think that's, isn't that the measure of the man and sort of the measure of that Glenn team there is?
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A serious, serious unity about them. They love to like celebrate each other's successes, and they really believe in one another, you know, that like, and it buys into that whole thing too, that like, you know, you don't want to let your club down, obviously you don't want to let yourself down, but you don't want to let the boy to the left of you down and the boy to the right of you down, because you know that they're going to stand up for you. I just thought it was, the celebrations were really lovely, really.
Yeah, I suppose they've all grown up together, like, and we've seen that there was a video on Derry GAA last year that was called The Boys from the Estate, like, and even Carville mentioned it in his speech, talking about, you know, playing darts. And I'd say they nearly live in each other's pockets. Like, I'd say they're all kind of best buds that way. And you can definitely see it in the team spirit. That's enough about the football, Lee, because the hurling was just as exciting. Once again, a one-point game came down to the very last puck of the ball. But after all is said and done, St. Thomas's of Galway have won their second All-Ireland club title. They won the first one back in 2013, and I suppose they've been on a bit of a pursuit to add to that in the 10 years, the 11 years that have followed, and they've had a tale of, I suppose, disappointing results in losing four semi-finals to Ballyhale, Bursley, Ballyhale, Dunloy in extremely disappointing fashion last year, where they just didn't really show up. They lost the final as well, but they put it all right yesterday. And yeah, nobody could say, like the Glen win, it was certainly well deserved, I suppose, as well, having beaten Ballygunner, who everybody nearly had as shoo-ins for the All-Ireland.
No, it definitely wasn't. And just the added effect too of being down to 14 men with so much hurling still left to play, you know, you just couldn't sort of escape the feeling that O'Loughlin-Gales were going to find a way, you know, to get back into it. And of course they do equalise at a stage, and you're thinking, you know, it's going to be a really, really big ask here for St. Thomas to find a way. But I thought they were brilliant, and I thought they were hugely entertaining. And like Glenn, you know, in that final third, leaders really stood up to the fore. A lot of players really thought that, like, you know, you just love it when you see a player that has it, and you can see this clear day in their eyes that, like, I am not letting this slip, you know, that sort of attitude. And they're putting everything on the line. They're like, there is no way that this is slipping through my grasp again. And there were several St. Thomas players that had that sort of mentality.
Well, nobody had it. Nobody summed it up more really than David Burke for me. And he was deservedly named as the TG Cahir man of the match. And you know, this man is just, he's an iron man. He did his cruise ship back in April. We're all aware of that he came back within 6 months to come on as a sub in the Galway final, which St. Thomas has won. And, you know, this is a man who has done it all. He was there when Thomas has won that first All-Ireland back in 2013. He captained Galway to the All-Ireland in 2017. He's 34 years of age, Lee. And a lot of people would have said, you know, you do your cruise ship when you're 33, 34. Like, you're on your last legs. Mm-hmm. But David Burke wouldn't take no for an answer. And he obviously put everything into getting back. I read a brilliant interview with his sister, Deirdre Burke, during the week. And, you know, she was talking about those last few months when, you know, you'd ask David, how's the knee and how's he getting on? And he'd just say, ah, not too bad. Yeah, he wouldn't give too much away. Like, but I suppose that's just, he's so dogged and so tough. And he's always, I think he's one of the hardest players that you could come across. Like, and, you know, he clearly put everything into it. He spoke of the 10 years of hurt that they'd had since winning last. And, you know, what a testament that is to a man who, at that age, coming back, that sort of an influence, to be throwing yourself into absolutely everything.
Yeah.
You know.
It's just insane. Like, he's like RoboCop nearly. The fact that injury came last March, for him to be back as quickly as he is absolutely insane. And anyone would tell you, all the experts and surgeons and doctors, you know, they'd nearly be saying, if you come back that quickly, you know, your body will break down again. You know, it's too much too soon. And then you, like you mentioned, you throw in his age profile, and none of it adds up. None of it makes any sense. You know, make it make sense now. You know, this man shouldn't be playing hurling at this level so soon after doing such a serious injury. I'd be fascinated to hear, like you already mentioned, he doesn't give too much away, but I'd be fascinated to hear what his process was in terms of that, because you hear stories of, like, when you do your cruciate, you have the choice of getting the operation, the surgery, obviously, and then really it's all about the rehab and getting the leg strong enough again, and that's a really long and daunting process. And then you have other footballers in the past, I think, like Kieran McGeaney, Michael Darren McCauley even did it, where they opted not to have the surgery. And what they did was they just rehabbed and strengthened the muscles around where the cruciate should be, and made them so like solid and, you know, and well functioned that, like, it didn't matter that they didn't have one nearly, and which is nearly an inhuman level of resilience that you need to have to do something like that. So it'd be fascinating to see what route he came down. But either way, to come back as quickly as he did is just unbelievable, and it embodies the spirit really of this St. Thomas team. You know, like, when no matter what you throw at them and how badly you damage them, they're just going to keep coming at you.
That's absolutely it, Lee. And I suppose the doubt coming into it was, would they be able to replicate that ferocity that they clearly brought to Port Laois 5 weeks ago when they beat Ballygunner? But while they had quite a slow start, they definitely brought it in spades in the second half. As you mentioned there about Denis, actually, Davy Byrne, who took a year out from Dublin this year, he actually came back within 6 months, having done the knee without getting the surgery as well last year. David Burke, now, he was on a programme with Catherine Thomas earlier this year. It was My Body Fix. And he kind of went through the difficulties and how hard it was to come back. And as far as I'm aware, he did have the surgery. So, you know, he obviously must have been doing some serious rehab. I actually watched the game back last night, and kind of just totted up all he had done in the game. And, you know, he scored the 3 points. One of them was just before half time when they really needed one. He went into the full forward line, got a point. He scored the first point straight after half time from, I'd say, 80 yards out under a bit of pressure. You know, an inspirational score. But he also won three frees, Lee. Two of them were scored. He gave three direct assists for points for his teammates, two of them for his brother, Aina. And yeah, just look, we've probably spoken enough about him at this stage, but definitely a deserved man of the match, and an unbelievable performance from him. I suppose another talking point is just the whole Burke factor with St. Thomas's. Like, we always talk about the families and Club GA and how much, you know, your brother playing beside you and so on. Like, when they won in 2013, David's father was the manager and he had five brothers on the team. His one of his brothers, the eldest, Kenneth, he was the manager yesterday. So I'm not sure if that's ever happened before, that a father and son have managed a club, their own club, to win All-Ireland club titles. It's obviously a phenomenal achievement. But then there was David, Dara, Cahill, who had an unbelievable game wing back. They were all playing. Aina obviously got the unbelievable winning score. Then they've their second cousins, Fintan Burke and Bernard Burke as well. So just an unbelievable family, those Burkes. And I suppose I've mentioned Fintan Burke there, Lee. What are your thoughts on the goal that has been this, the ghost goal, I suppose?
Yeah.
There was hurling folk, even Dermot the Rock O'Sullivan said that VAR mentioned the dreaded three letters, VAR, in relation to hurling. I never thought I'd see the day. Do we need it?
Yeah, no. It's very surprising, yeah, in hurling people especially, you know, they're as traditional as they come typically. So for them to be looking VAR to be introduced even just for one moment is funny. What is interesting, right, is that during the COVID years where you had to do like staycations and stuff, me and the girlfriend did like a little tour around the West and then down into Galway and then into Dublin, and there was no games or nothing on at that stage, but you could still do little things. And one of the things was the Croke Park tour, and I'd never done it before, so we thought we would. And interestingly, they were showing us or telling us about how hockey works, and you know, the camera, there's a gap there, and, you know, speak to the ref and things. And he actually said that technically they do have VAR, like they have the cameras where they can replay decisions for red cards and things and zoom in, and you know, they have all of that, maybe not as technically advanced as obviously what it would be in the Premier League, but the point is there's second eyes out there and cameras to watch, and there's communication with the match officials, so like it's actually all in place. But the rules state that, you know, they only use it for hockey, but it is just funny, you know, that it's all there and it's all installed, so it maybe isn't as far-fetched a dream or fantasy as you may think. It could eventually go that way. On the thing itself, I thought Fittenberg just, first of all, I thought he was brilliant to get himself, his body on the line to stop the shot in general. And then he couldn't nearly sort out his feet, and you know, he fell into the goal with the ball in his hand. And then the question is, did it cross the line? Didn't it? And I think you were going to make an interesting argument compared to that Arsenal fiasco.
You're going to sit on the fence, are you?
Yeah, I'm just going to let you say what you say first. And tell you what you're wrong.
Well, look, I'm not saying... everyone is saying that it was a certain goal and it was a definite goal, and so on. And I know that you have the photos that make it appear like the ball was definitely over the line. Like when you're coming from the angle outside the goals and from afar, it kind of makes it look like it's further over the line than it is. I don't think, even if there was people like O'Loughlin Gales on the sideline, they were kind of saying to Sean Stack, and they were shouting at him, you know, look up at that big screen and you'll see it, that it was over the line. And of course, as is always the way in Croke Park, Lee, when something controversial happens, it showed it the first time, probably by mistake, on the big screen. And then the second time, it's about to show Owen Wall taking the shot, and it just cuts out, and everyone in Croke Park kind of starts booing at that stage. But I do remember that from earlier in the season in the Premier League, when Newcastle got a goal against Arsenal, and it was actually given, and Arsenal were saying, you know, that the ball was definitely out of play. And then the replay was from the same sort of angle overhead and from back this side of the ball, and like you're sure that the ball is out. Mm-hmm. And then you see it from overhead, which came out a couple of days later, and it was actually extremely tight. Like, so like it more than likely was over the line, but I do think you probably need an overhead angle, like from the crossbar, say, to just say for definite.
And it's nearly, and like even with the cameras and the photos and things like that, there's still an element of it being inconclusive, so you can only feel for the umpires, you know, who are trying to...
Well, they should have been, they were both behind the goals. Like, yeah, that was probably it would have been, like, they were the ones that should have seen it, really, like, yeah. And you wonder why they were behind the goals, like, why would you be behind the goals when a lad is taking a shot on goal?
Yeah.
Do you know, like, you should be level with the goals, and, like, that's probably your only job there if a lad is taking a shot on goal, to see does it cross the line or not. And both of them were in the same place, like.
No, it is like, and then you know, and that does give Gales a reason to be annoyed about it. Like, yeah, I mean, it is one of them. It's like they should be frustrated, obviously, but it isn't as you know, it's not a robbery of a decision. It's just so hard to call. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. I've never really seen anything like it before in Ireland. Like, you know, it was just so bizarre. You nearly think they save these things for finals.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, between the controversy last year as well.
Yeah.
Like, it, as like you would, it was disappointing for O'Loch and Gales, like, because you don't like something like that happening, especially on the final day. As you said, Fintan de Burke deserves a lot of credit. That was an unbelievable. I don't know how he managed to catch the ball, first of all, and then he was so quick up. He just wanted to clear his lines. He lamped the ball before the umpires could even get themselves to the goals, you know, to make a decision.
Yeah.
He was just clearing up. You know, get this whole thing out of the way. But yeah, I suppose it was typically similar enough to the Ballygunner game. It was a hard hitting game, and the referee Sean Stack, like, he was so involved in the game. I like, having watched it back last night, the amount of flash points and the amount of, you know, times where could this lad have got a card here? Like, 5 minutes in, Conor Cooney turns around, having been given something of a hospital pass, and Conor Heary absolutely lined him up and buried him with a shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Burke comes in as fiery as he always is, and he gives Owen O'Shea a belt with the hurl. And I'm thinking, after seeing Conor Heary get the yellow, and, you know, usually the ref gives two yellows at the one time, I'm thinking, is Dave Burke going to get sent off here? But there was so many of those moments. There was talk that Aina Burke, we're going to talk about his score in a few minutes. There was talk that he could have got sent off. You know, he was on a yellow, having pulled Mikey Butler down just before half time. Then he gave a nasty slap on Jordan Malloy. Mentioned Jordan Malloy. Jordan Malloy could have been sent off because he headbutted David Burke. There were so many flashpoints. I'm thinking of John Head. I'm nearly sure it was John Head. He pushed Sean Budger out over the advertising horns.
Oh, yeah.
We probably shouldn't be laughing, but the amount of flashpoints in this game, and I'd say that probably added to the decision to send James Regan off. I'd say Sean Sack just lost his patience.
I think so. It was definitely a case of two teams who were never going to take a step backwards, and you know, they weren't going to shrink on the day, sort of thing. But, like, you can make a point that, like, if it was a different referee, you know, just different decisions would have been made, and different people would have got sent off, and maybe James would have stayed on, and would that have actually changed the outcome of the match? I'm not too sure, but, like, it would have been an incredibly difficult game to manage and to referee, because it was just kicking off everywhere, wasn't it? It was like a minefield.
It absolutely was. Just, pure madness. I suppose, like, Kenneth Burke after game, he wasn't really conceding much. He said, just on the goal, he said, if it did go in, sometimes you get the rub of the green, other times you don't. You just have to adapt and keep going. I suppose it had no real effect on the game after that. you know, O'Loughlin's would probably argue with that a small bit, but He did take issue with Regan's red card as well. He said, I don't think he connected with him really. It looked bad at the time. The referee only sees it right once. He has to make a decision. But I don't think he caught him at all. So we were very disappointed with the decision at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They were, as we said, it was probably just a build-up of things in Sean Stack. He said something has to give here. I do think it was on the harsh side. I think Jack Nolan kind of made a bit more out of it than was in it, from what we could see. But David Burke said it in his post-match interview, Lee, sometimes when you get the red card, you know, it's such a, like, it hits you hard. And he said that that was our now or never moment. We realised, like, you know, we have to start hurling here. And yeah, from then on, they played almost the full second half with 14 men. And from then on, Thomas's were a different team completely.
Yeah, no, and it does do that to some player, or to some teams. Do you know the way when it gets to maybe the last 5 minutes of a game, you sort of start to be like, oh my God, we're actually running out of time here. We really, really need to get our act together, and everyone sort of lifts it. But it's nearly a lot of the time, you know, too little too late. But when you get a red card, or even in the Glen game when Cathal Mulholland got his black card so late in that match, it sort of makes you think, well, we're going to have to work doubly as hard now, and we're going to have to really give that last big push that everyone gives. You're going to have to give it, you know, a little bit sooner. And it can bond a team in some regards. We didn't actually mention Cal Mahalan's block when he came back on for Glenn, which was just unbelievable against Benacarl. It definitely deserves a mention. And then just in this occasion as well, St. Thomas, you know, they were able to perform magnificently, even with the red card. But on the tackle itself, you know, I was just sort of, obviously I'm not a hurling connoisseur like yourself.
Oh, you're getting there.
I'm doing well. I might know the most in Tyrone, but that's not a big claim, I don't think. technically speaking, and this is sort of the debate, I was following a lot of the debate on Twitter. It's always interesting to see what people say. You know, they were saying, like, ultimately, would you agree that it was soft, but technically correct? You know, is that fair to say?
Well, I suppose it's the consistency, like... Conor Heary's probably was a worse hit, you know what I mean? Yeah. And he wasn't sent off. And like, technically it probably was. Like, it was technically it was the exact same really as Richie Hogan's red card in the 2019 Ireland final. Mm-hmm. when he hit Cathal Barrett that time. And you know, it was a glancing blow. I suppose you probably shouldn't have the elbow out in a situation like that. You know, so it's kinda like the referee, as we've mentioned all these flashpoints, the referee can't get everything right. Like,
yeah, and
you have to have a bit of patience. Like, how are you going to get everything right when it's so confrontational and frantic. Emotions are running so high, so frantic, exactly. Like, so, tough job for him as well, for sure. It took on a similar pattern to the Football League in that the favourites St. Thomas's, the favourites Glenn, you know, they're both coming in having beaten the favourites in the semi-finals, Kilmacud and Ballygunner, that these teams were slow to start. And O'Loughlin Gales were on fire early on. They're in the first half, their half back line had 6 points from play scored. David Fogarty, Paddy Deegan and Jordan Malloy were all on fire. And they were running at St. Thomas's, and yeah, as we said, the red card, it woke St. Thomas's up in the second half. I want to give look, we're going to finish the show talking about Aina Burke, and I honestly think I could talk about this score. I'd say you could give me an hour talking about this score itself, even his last two scores, to be honest. But I want to give a shout out to Dave Fogarty. That point he got just before to level the game up was unbelievable. This is a lad who scored a levelling point in the Kilkenny final. He scored the winning point against Cushendall. He's a young man. He'd scored a brilliant point in the first half, and you know, O'Loughlin's Gales, their life was on the line yesterday. They were a point down. He gets a pass from Conor Kelly on his own 45. Aina Burke, of all people, is flying in to block him down. 40 shows unbelievable composure to take it around Burke and buries it over there from a good 75, 80 metres out. Just an incredible score in the circumstances from a young man who has had an exceptional year for O'Loughlin Gales. And I know he's small and he's young, but he's definitely a player who has a really bright future for Kilkenny.
Yeah, and there's something so satisfying about seeing a young fella like that, you know, sort of just take the weight of the world on his shoulders and make it look so effortless, you know, that maybe the ignorance of youth kind of thing, you know, where it doesn't seem to bother him in the slightest, and he just sees it as another opportunity to showcase his talents. And that's what better stage than an All-Ireland club final. And in some ways it's almost a shame that wasn't the point that could take it to extra time, but the point that wins it, as you're going to talk about now, is incredible. But before you do get to that, I do want to ask about Mickey Butler. Have you seen this?
Wearing Limerick shorts, is it?
Yeah, why is he wearing Limerick shorts?
I suppose it's white and green as well.
No, I know why. Like, I know it's the same colour, but surely in the club All-Ireland, you'd wear your club shorts. Like, could he not have borrowed a pair from someone?
I suppose he easily could have, all right. I know I've seen Tony Kelly wear Kilkenny shorts when he's playing for Ballyhea in recent years. And I know, like, a lot of lads, say even just playing with my club, you'd see some lads wearing Lee shorts and Cavan shorts just because they're the same, and sometimes it can be hard to get the club shorts, you know. That's a way. It definitely was funny to see it, though.
It was. It's maybe a luck thing as well. Maybe he wore them earlier on and thought they brought him good luck, and who knows, superstition and all that. But yeah, it was just funny. Now, you know, there's always eagle-eyed fans, like, they don't miss anything.
Yeah, it's heartbreak for them O'Loughlin Gales boys, like Paddy Deegan, Hugh Lawler, Mikey Butler has maybe lost one less, but Paddy Deegan and Hugh Lawler have lost three All-Irelands with Kilkenny now, and a club All-Ireland with O'Loughlin Gales as well. Like, so, you know, that'll be a difficult one to take for them, especially, you know, the brilliant years that those two lads have had. Like, I know Dave Burke has been exceptional, but I would say Paddy Deegan would be very hard pushed to be beaten to Club Hurler of the Year, just the year that he's had, especially just an absolute, he's just unbelievable, really, from centre half back, a bit like Conor Glass, as you were describing earlier, in the football. And I suppose, Lee, to last, we'll save the best to last, because that's what Aina Burke did in the final. You have to give a bit of praise to Gerald Kelly, the Thomas's goalkeeper. He had scored a free from about 90 yards out. I've actually seen that man score a goal from a puck out before, playing for Mayo a few years ago. He has an unmerciful belt of a ball, and he gave it absolutely everything with the last puck out of the day. Well, not the last puck out of the day, with his last puck out, when he sent it down into the... He nearly landed on the 21, Lee. And, you know, that kind of had O'Loughlin Gales chasing and under a bit of pressure, like, from a puck out, which was a serious belt from Kelly. And it just all took off from there. It was something special to watch, and I'm sure you enjoyed it there. Aina Burke's just moment of genius.
Oh yeah, I mean, I never seen anything quite like it, because, like, as unbelievable as that puck out was and stuff, and you know, they sort of carve an opportunity, but it isn't even really an opportunity. Like, it's not clear cut. Like, the angle that he's at, the fact that he doesn't even, like, no one's expecting him to shoot, because his back is to goal. He doesn't even take time to, you know, to look over his shoulder. He just, I don't know if it was like on pure instinct or, you know, a divine intervention or whatever. I have never seen anything like that at that time of the match, from that distance, that angle, in such an occasion as well. It was just surreal. Like, I mean, surely if you said the stadium was sort of stunned when Conor Glass's goal went in, it must have erupted equally as big when that went over the bar.
Yeah, it was the best point I've ever seen in my life, Lee, just considering that was it, the last, you know, the last roll of the dice in an All-Ireland final, to do what he did. And he scored an unbelievable point a few minutes earlier. And they're talking about Aina Burke, he's able to score a point from a phone box, you know, and he can swing so quick. And he did that 5 minutes earlier. This one, just, I don't know, what can you say about it? Like, I jumped up out of my seat in the press box. I had the perfect view. We were up in the Hogan stand in the press box scene. And I think everyone jumped out of their seats just like, what has just happened? Because you see him, he's kind of juggling with the ball. He does a full 360 trying to bring it down into control. And he eventually gets it. And then he's swinging straight away. And I'd say, you know, by looking at the goalkeeper, like, is this going close? And the Stephen Murphy was looking at it, and I'd say he was, you know, so disappointed seeing it sail over the bar. But just an incredible, incredible score from Aina Burke. He's obviously a player that can do this. He's been a sharpshooter for St. Thomas's for years and years. And yeah, I was sitting beside Darren Frehill from RTE in the press box, and he had interviewed Aoná Burke straight after the game. And I asked him, what was he like down there? And he said that he was actually shaken, Lee. It probably wasn't long after the final whistle, but I listened back to the interview, and Darren Friel's first question to him was like, how are you after that? And Aoná Burke was like, I'm not good. Oh my God. Do you know, like he was shaking with the excitement of it all. And, I don't know, like what more can you say? Like it was just, it was something special, like, and something special to see in an All-Ireland final.
Do you ever like when you were in school at English, and then there's always, it's some year group anyway, there's always a task where it's like, oh, you have to write down, it's like creative writing. You have to write down like a dream scenario, and basically all of the boys in the classroom wrote how they're going to either win, you know, the All-Ireland with their county or the Premier League with Man United or whatever. And I'd say there's hurlers growing up all over the country who would have dreamed of winning the club All-Ireland by scoring the best point you'll ever see right at the day in seconds. You know, like even in like a child's fantasy, that would have been the most ludicrous thing you could have come up with, or you couldn't even have come up with something just quite as ridiculous as what Aoná actually managed to pull off. And that's just fairy tale stuff in the end. So I'm sure, like, imagine, you know, you just completed all of your dreams, and then you're being interviewed and asked to describe how it feels. It must be, I'm not surprised he was shaking.
It's no wonder he was shaking. And Lee, that is a great note to finish it on. It's been an unbelievable club season. I think we'll do Teams of the Year when we're back next week. The Allianz League is kicking off next week, so there's no rest for us. But a brilliant finale to an unbelievable club season, and we're definitely looking forward to more to come in the next few weeks. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
Sports Joe presents the GAA Hour.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.